Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. Stay ahead of all the big games in the best league in the world, the Premier League. With the latest odds, form guides, expert opinions and more, the fans are the players at Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com, 18+, begambleaware.org, T's and C's apply.
This is a Game Day podcast from TalkSport.
Hello and welcome to the Game Day podcast from TalkSport with me, Sam Matterface, the former Manchester City, West Ham and England winger Trevor Sinclair, and TalkSport's football correspondent Alex Crook. So much to get into: the cup final preview, the big relegation games, and Arsenal red-faced and holding on to fourth place looks tricky now.
Spurs 3, Arsenal 0, the goal inside 1 minute and 15 seconds at the start of the second half, and it's now beginning to get very embarrassing for Arsenal. Spurs 3, 10-man Arsenal 0. The sending off of Rob Holding is costing Arsenal more and more by the minute here.
All the best stats, team news, previews, reviews of all the big games. It's the best pod available. It's the Game Day podcast from TalkSport.
This is Game Day.
It's a late night podcast for us. Hello, gentlemen, Trevor Sinclair and Alex Crook. Early morning delivery to you because of the North London Derby. Talking of deliveries, Crook's wearing his, is it bowling gear? What is that? French bowls or something? Is that cricket?
It's my cricket clobber, as you know, but no, it's not bowling gear.
Cricket clobber.
I don't bowl, and no. I bat occasionally.
Do you?
I'm mainly in the field.
What do you do? Oh, right, okay, you just stand.
Mainly in the field.
How many runs did you get tonight?
I got six, which is good for me.
Well done. What number do you bat?
I batted at 9 today.
Did you? Okay, so you're batting above your average, not for the first time. We'll get to the North London Derby in just a second, the actual game. But the state of play right now looks like this. Chelsea, third, 36 games, 42-plus goal difference, 70 points. There's a four-point gap to Arsenal in fourth, 36 games played, 66 points, and a plus 11 goal difference. Tottenham Hotspur, 36 games played, 23-plus goal difference and 65 points. They're a point behind tonight. Look, any semblance of the idea of it being over now is absolutely fanciful, isn't it, Trevor? It's all to play for.
Absolutely. And you look at the games that Arsenal have got. Newcastle away. We know how well Newcastle have done under Eddie Howe recently. Not so much recently, obviously, because they got smashed off Manchester City. But in general, the last few months have been superb. And then they've got Everton who are scrapping for the lives. Even though it is at the Emirates, Everton might still need points for that game. And you know what it's like. You know, a team down there might be down there because they've not played well all season. But all of a sudden, they're in desperation and they pull out performances as we've seen recently. So a lot of work to do for Arsenal, even though they've got a single point lead over Tottenham. And I would suggest that, you know, Arteta will be saying to him, win both games and it's in our hands and we've done it.
Well, that's all they can do because there's no margin for error because you won't expect Tottenham to slip up against either Burnley or Norwich. I mean, it's interesting, isn't it? I think Arsenal have lost more games, conceded more goals and failed to score as many goals as Tottenham Hotspur. It is every chance, actually, that they could find themselves above them at the end of the season. But that's going to take some coming back from tonight. Are we now certain, Crook, you can put Chelsea into the Champions League?
I think so. So congratulations to Thomas Tuchel.
Despite your little barb with Darren Lewis trying to get me sucked into some possible Leeds defeat, in fact, you were trying to inflict on me earlier in the week.
I think we were fishing, but we were half right.
Badly.
Because we said if Tottenham win and Chelsea lose, then it would have been up for grabs. But I think maybe we gave Leeds United too much credit. We'll come on to them. But you're right, Arsenal have to be foot perfect now for the rest of the season, because I think Tottenham will win both games. They always beat Burnley at home. They always beat them quite comfortably. And then they go to Norwich on the final day. I think you could put me, you and Trevor in a Tottenham team and still beat Norwich on the final day. And I think Eddie Howe will be frustrated and he'll be disappointed with the suggestion that Newcastle are on the beach. It's their last home game of the season. I think that's a really difficult game in prospect for Arsenal.
Okay, right. Cup final, top four, title, relegations, all still to be settled with two games to go. It's all going right down to the wire.
Up steps Kane, hits it right footed. Sent Maxwell the wrong way. And first blood in the 191st North London Derby has gone away of Spurs.
This will really break the morale. This will really hurt the squad. And we don't have characters in our squad. We don't.
And it is Arsenal who will play the rest of the game with 10 men. A needless, stupid, idiotic sending off for Rob Holding, already on a yellow card.
The way that they went into the first period of the game, there was a calmness about Spurs. And that is obviously clearly something that Conte has brought.
And from the corner, Harry Kane has scored from a distance that anybody could have scored from. You, me, Jay, anybody could have scored from. It was less than a yard out. Spurs 2, Arsenal 0.
Arsenal looked like they were just... they went out and it just all kind of fell apart really quickly. And that's the difference in a great manager and an average manager. Yeah.
Spurs 3, Arsenal 0. The goal inside 1 minute and 15 seconds at the start of the second half. And it's now beginning to get very embarrassing for Arsenal. Spurs 3, 10-man Arsenal 0. The sending off of Rob Holding is costing Arsenal more and more by the minute here.
Right now, Spurs are head and shoulders above Arsenal. Tonight's performance told me that they're not ready for top four.
Tottenham 3, Arsenal 0, and it's a resounding victory for Antonio Conte and Tottenham Hotspur in the North London Derby, which we thought might be pivotal and could turn out that way. Look, it started badly for Arsenal and just got worse. Son was caught in a Cedric Holding sandwich. But Trevor, how much was Paul Tierney influenced by the shenanigans between Holding and Son a little bit earlier on, who felt a little bit picked on for the first 20 minutes? Do you think the penalty was soft?
No, I don't. I think it was a blatant penalty. You can shoulder charge someone shoulder to shoulder, but when you're when you're behind them and you shoulder charge them in the back, I thought it was quite a dangerous challenge. Because if you see where Son flew after he got shoved in the back by Cedric's shoulder, he could have collided with Holding and it could have been a nasty head collision. I thought it was a dangerous play. I thought Paul Tierney got it correctly. I don't think he was influenced, although I do feel that Holding was so excited for the game. You know, too like uptight. And he knows, I think the reason is he knows the quality that Son's got, the intensity, the pace, the end product, the finishing. And he just didn't want to give him an inch. And he just got too tight, made poor decisions and he was too anxious. And that's what ended up getting him the red card. But the penalty decision, I think Paul Tierney certainly got that one 100% right.
And you and I were having a conversation during the game, doing sort of a lot of running text commentary. And both of us thought that this was going to end with Arsenal losing their heads and losing a man. You said it, I think, earlier on TalkSport. I said to you after about 10 minutes, Rob Holding's going to get himself sent off here. It was obvious because he was too amped up for the game. They did concede a penalty as well. We've already mentioned that. Kane scored all six penalties against Arsenal. And this one was then backed up by a poacher's finish at the far post with a stooping header, which comes after the sending off. And without Arteta reacting and bringing on a defender quick enough, when you do end up in a situation where your central defender has been sent off and you quickly got to try and reset, do you need to make sure that you've got the right personnel on the pitch almost immediately after that? Because otherwise you leave Harry Kane lurking at the far post.
Yeah, that's naivety from Mikel Arteta and maybe a bit of arrogance as well, that he felt that Arsenal still had the tools to hurt Tottenham. I think man for man, we discussed it on the podcast of the weekend, Tottenham are better than Arsenal, man for man. They've got a better manager.
Lewis? Darren, where's your stats now, mate?
They've got a better manager in Antonio Conte, somebody who knows how to handle these big game situations. And maybe what we saw was an example of a manager who is still learning on the job. I think he is a bit too emotional at times, Mikel Arteta. And maybe that seeped into his players on Thursday night as well. And I think I'm correct in saying that Arsenal have had more red cards since Mikel Arteta took charge than any other Premier League team. And that's a throwback to the early days under Arsene Wenger. I think it's an issue for Arsenal in terms of their mental fortitude, their in-game management, if you like, and that could well cost them come the end of the season.
Yeah, at 13 Premier League red cards since Arteta's appointment in December 2019, the most of any club, and six this season. Why is it happening? What does Mikel Arteta exude that makes his team do this? Or is this just an inexperienced group of players?
Well, I think you can name both what you just said there at the club. But I think when you look at the manager, for me, he looks agitated. He's very animated. Like literally every decision, he's getting into the fourth official on the side. His animation when decisions are going down, he seems to be emotionally reacting to these things. And I think there was a massive contrast in the technical areas at Tottenham Stadium, because if you looked at Conte, even the first goal, the second goal, there was a little bit of a fist pump, and the third goal is kind of the game's put to bed. There was a little bit more of a celebration, but the first goal, he hardly twitches. He's like literally ice cold. And I think Arteta should take a leaf out of that book, because let's not try and
pretend that Antonio Conte isn't a demonstrative manager on the
course. Of course he is at times. Of course he is. But listen, it's like cup finals, derbies, huge games. You need to calm the players more than get them up for it, because they're up for everyone is talking about this game all week before this game in North London. Anyone who sees any of the players from both Spurs and Arsenal, the first thing that they come out of the mouths is, are you looking forward to the game? Come on, do it for the Reds or do it for the White. This is all that's been on their mind. So as a manager, you know, when you're in these situations, when you get your team in, you have to calm them down, not get them up and because they're already hyped for the game. So I feel probably Arteta may have been guilty of that. But I said to you, Sam, when we were texting earlier, I said, the worst thing is, I'm talking about, you know, the lack of discipline in this Arsenal side. We're talking about, I'm saying, I don't think Arsenal can get a result in this game because, not because the team are not good enough, because they've got head loss in huge games. We've seen it against Manchester City in a brilliant position, 1-0 up, head loss, sending off. Then it's a different player. Then it's a different, it's not just one player. So you have to go back to the management and the leader, and that is Arteta. And for whatever reason, he's not getting this right at the moment.
And like you said, if we're talking about it, Antonio Conte is certainly talking about it and probably telling his players to focus upon it. And it's interesting you say about Mikel Arteta, because we have given him a bit of a big up over the last couple of weeks for getting Arsenal into this position. I think we all thought that they'd been a little bit lucky actually with some of the way that the fixtures had fallen for them. And obviously Tottenham were a little bit annoyed about the fact that this North London derby was rescheduled because of a COVID outbreak. What he wouldn't have wanted, Mikel Arteta, is after that terrible first half, was to concede 90 seconds into the second half. Heung-min Son now has 24 goal involvements. He scored 17 and assisted 7 in 22 appearances since the start of December. And he was the catalyst again tonight. He's been so effective for Tottenham and Antonio Conte. Are you surprised, Crook, that he was taken off with 18 minutes to go with the golden boot in sight? Don't worry, fella, you got Burnley and Norwich before the season's out.
I was going to say, I think he might well end up with the golden boot when you look at those two fixtures, one behind Mohamed Salah, bearing in mind that he doesn't take penalties for Tottenham. That is an incredible achievement. And if Tottenham do end up in the top four, I think he will be a massive part of that. And maybe is a bit unlucky that nobody's really talking about him in terms of player of the year. I think we're all torn between De Bruyne and Salah. Personally, I think Virgil van Dijk's got a shout as well, but nobody is really bigging up Son for that particular accolade. Don't raise your eyebrows, Trevor Sinclair. Look, where Liverpool.
Doesn't everybody have to, like, do you have to win something to sort of get the player?
No,
of the
I think
year,
he raises his eyebrows. He raises eyebrows at the suggestion of Virgil van Dijk. When you look at where Liverpool were last season, where they are now.
Transformative.
I think the impact has been huge, but I actually think that his performances at times have not been great. That's why I raised my eyebrows.
Okay. Well, you're the former pro. I'll take your word for that. But I think
Son said that himself, though, hasn't he? I mean, I think Virgil said that himself. It took him a little while to come back up to full speed because he's not a robot.
Yeah. When you come back from such a severe injury, that is going to be the case. But anyway, we're digressing. I think Son deserves an honourable mention. And again, you look at the goal involvement between him and Harry Kane. That is a fantastic combination, almost single-handedly firing Tottenham into contention for the top four. I think Romero has been superb at the back as well. And the two lads they signed in January, Kulusevski and Bentancur, have made a real difference. And they've got a maestro in the dugout. But Son is a terrific player. Am I surprised he was taken off? Probably not, because he might end up with the golden boot anyway. And Tottenham have got bigger fish to fry now. That game was done and dusted. It was a sensible substitution.
He was annoyed about it, though, wasn't he? He was annoyed about it. And I quite like the fact that he was annoyed about it because it shows... He did an interview this week, actually, where he said he wasn't interested in the Golden Boot, which is nonsense, because he clearly is, because he threw a strop as soon as that board went up with his number on it. And he sensed that there were more goals to get. You mentioned about Arsenal-Newcastle on Monday night, Crook, and Trevor... You know, their other game is Everton at home, and Everton might still have something to play for on that day as well. And for the game against Arsenal Monday night, Arsenal will be without Rob Holding. That's a fact. Ben White's injury is not 100% healed. He was on the bench and they didn't bring him on tonight. And Gabriel had to come off with a problem as well. Mm. Defensively, the pressure is going to be on them, isn't it? I mean, look, Tottenham probably will win at the weekend, although in this Premier League, you can never predict anything. But if they do, it's a tricky game away from home with all the pressure on their shoulders.
Yeah, it's a huge game. And you look at that weakness in the heart of the defence. I think they'll have to rush White back. I think when you look at mistakes, say, and you analyse a certain mistake that he made with Thomas Partey in the Arsenal, North London derby, and he got injured and he had a poor game, Partey. I think that's the reason why he didn't want to bring White back in the game today. You know, once you've made that mistake, you try not to make it again, and they'll be desperate to get White back on the pitch. And probably, even though they were tempted to put him out there today, it'll probably do him good having that few extra days to build himself up, get himself match fit, and then they'll still have to manage that. But it's a huge area of concern because Holding has done a good job while White's been out until obviously today. I feel he's part of the reason why he was so agitated and up for this game was because he realised that Ben White is getting closer to being back fit and he doesn't want to lose his place and he wanted to put in that extra special performance. But like I mentioned earlier, these games, just do the normal performance because that will do. Keep your heads. And unfortunately, you never managed to do that. But it's a huge game. And yeah, they'll be tested by Arsenal because Newcastle. Newcastle will be seething after the way they got beat off Manchester City and they'll want to bounce back well.
They will. Tottenham play Burnley at the weekend. It's a huge game live on TalkSport on Sunday at 12 o'clock. It has implications at the bottom of the table as well as the top four. Burnley fighting for their lives, but struggling with injuries. They've got real problems. Ben Mee, J. Rodriguez, Tarkowski, Westwood and Vidra. All doubts for the game. But what they must do, Crook, is start with Maxwell Cornet in the team this week.
Yeah, and I'm sure they will. It was a baffling decision, really, to leave him out last weekend, one that backfired. I think Tarkowski is a huge blow when you consider that they're already without Ben Mee as their two first-choice central defenders. And they have a really poor record away from home against Tottenham. I was there 3 seasons ago, maybe, when Son scored that incredible goal of the season, picked up the ball inside own half and basically took on the entire Burnley team and then scored. Mm. I think Tottenham will not only win the game, I think they'll win comfortably. I can see a 3 or 4 nil victory, which will add to Burnley's relegation woes. And as you say, really put the pressure on Arsenal going into Monday night. I mean,
and the pressure on Burnley, because if Burnley were to lose that game, they're in a situation themselves where they're looking over their shoulder going into the last day of the season.
Yeah, I said last weekend they probably needed one more win, Burnley, to be safe. I think 37 points will keep you up this season. They might not even need one more win because we're going to talk again about Leeds later. They look in an absolute mess at the moment. But Burnley won't want to go there and get hammered and put pressure on themselves going into the last day of the season. But really, I can only see that outcome. I think Tottenham will be buoyed by this midweek win. They've got Kane and Son in tremendous form. They're defending well. Very difficult to make a case for Burnley because I think probably the bubble has burst under Mike Jackson.
Sean Dyche just spoken for the first time this week since being sacked. He said, we were losing our edge. And I suppose they need to get that back and get that back quickly. As Crookie was saying, we'll have more relegation chat to come. But what about the big game of the weekend? The 141st FA Cup Final.
Werner inside the Oates. Mason Mount, it is 2-0 Chelsea. And yet another FA Cup Final is surely there.
This FA Cup, it's the most prestigious, most traditional cup in the world. There are not a lot of bigger games to be part of.
It's back out to the right edge of the area. What a goal!
goal by Sadio Mane on the volley inside the box.
Yeah, man, we played Chelsea already a lot of times this season. Still necessary, and then from Thursday on we will try to help the boys with the right information to prepare for this game.
Liverpool reached the FA Cup final for the first time in 10 years and keep alive their ambitious drive towards all four major trophies.
Yes, the 141st FA Cup final sees 8 times winners Chelsea face 7 times winners Liverpool, with Thomas Tuchel's side aiming to end Jurgen Klopp's hopes of an historic quadruple. Now, the gap, Trevor, between second and third is massive in terms of points. But the games between the two have been pretty tight this season. 1-1 in August when Chelsea had Reece James sent off at Anfield. 2-2 in January in a thrilling match at Stamford Bridge where they raced into a 2-goal lead Liverpool when Chelsea came back into it. And then one of the best nil-nils of the season in the League Cup final, which Liverpool won eventually at the end of an epic penalty shootout. Do you think Chelsea can raise their game again for Liverpool? Will Thomas Tuchel come up with a tactical plan that nullifies the Reds' threat? Is that even possible?
Well, I think Liverpool are favourites, obviously, but Chelsea, they're European champions. I was at the first game of the season with you at Anfield, and when Reece James got sent off, and Chelsea was still the better team. Now, a lot's happened since then. The 2-2 draw was an intriguing game. But like you say, there's a lot of difference between the points tally that they've both managed to gain this season. But I don't think you can ever put anything past Chelsea. In a cup final, we've seen it in the Champions League final, they were massive underdogs against Manchester City. They won the game 1-0 and with a better team and deserved that win. I certainly would give Chelsea a chance. Although, you know, the way Liverpool have been playing and sticking to the tail of Manchester City at the top of the table, I think, you know, you always have to say they are likely favourites, but Chelsea can spring a surprise for sure.
Thomas Tuchel has only actually won one cup final with Chelsea, despite the fact that he won the Champions League, the Club World Cup, because they drew the Club World Cup and ended up having to win it on penalties, really. And they lost the FA Cup final against Leicester. They just about beat Manchester City. Obviously, that's a tight game and they did very well to do so. And the League Cup final obviously didn't score at Wembley. In fact, Wembley's been a bit sort of heartbreak hotel for Chelsea over the course of the last few years. And the problem has been this season, really. Injuries, COVID, having players out. But the blend in midfield has been a real problem for them. And with Fabinho absent and Thiago nailed on to play in the cup final, it's a big worry for Chelsea because they haven't faced him from the start in any of those draws that I mentioned earlier. And their answer in that area is probably going to be Jorginho and Ruben Loftus-Cheek if Conte isn't fit, because we know it's unlikely that Kovacic is going to recover from that horror tackle from Dan James.
Mm. Yeah, I think you're being a bit harsh on Ruben Loftus-Cheek. I actually think that he's been one of the shining lights in recent weeks for Chelsea. Obviously scored in the FA Cup semi-final. Thought he'd scored his first Premier League goal for Chelsea in 3 years against Wolves at the weekend, only to be denied by an obvious offside. But I think he really has stepped up his game in the last 6 to 7 weeks. So I don't necessarily fear for them in that area. I fear for them because they aren't the Chelsea even that faced Liverpool in that League Cup final in February. There was nothing to split the two teams. In fact, you could argue that Chelsea were unlucky not to win the game because Lukaku scored a goal that was very dubious in terms of being offside. But Chelsea just don't seem to be in the same rhythm. I know it was a good win against Leeds in the week and that was timely in terms of boosting confidence, but there just look problems there. Rudiger is going through the motions a bit, in my opinion, because he knows he's got this big money move to Real Madrid on the horizon. Azpilicueta, for me, has looked off the pace, and I wonder if the off-field issues surrounding his future have affected him. Mason Mount obviously was left out against Wolves at the weekend, and I don't think he's had a stellar season. And that's before you come on to the forward areas where Lukaku, to me, still looks a bit disinterested. Werner just isn't there, and Havertz is flitted in and out of games. I think if Liverpool bring their A game, it's very difficult to see Chelsea being able to raise themselves to the kind of levels that they were at earlier in the season to make a contest of this. I think Liverpool have the ability to blow Chelsea away.
13 goals this season for Mason Mount in 51 appearances. He's most prolific for Chelsea. He was Chelsea's top scorer in the Premier League with 11 goals. You know, scored the second goal Sort of scored, he scored the first goal, made the second goal on a Wednesday night, whatever it was. I think he's had quite a good season, really, Mason Mount. I think you're being very harsh on him. But anyway, I would say that, wouldn't I? Liverpool fans have been a little bit worried about Chelsea because they always seem to know how to test that high line. And that's certainly something they exposed in the game at Wembley in the League Cup final. But they have so much threat, Liverpool. I think if they approach the game the way they did the semi-final of this competition, they can blow Chelsea away early like they did with Manchester City. That front three of Diaz, Mane and Salah. And I think we're pretty convinced that it will be that front three. They can be uncontrollable at their best. And actually, Mane, his figures post-AFCON are brilliant. 12 goals, all from open play since coming back from the Africa Cup of Nations. Whereas Salah, really, 7 goals in the games that he's come back after the AFCON. And 3 of those have been penalties.
Yeah, it's almost like that win, I suppose, that victory for Mane has given him a huge confidence boost and completely opposite for Salah. But like you say, they've got an unbelievable front 5 or 6 players that they can pick from now. All seem to be on song, all seem to be on form. And I think Diaz has been outstanding. What a signing. You know, he's quite a frail guy when you look at his physical presence, but he's got a huge personality on the pitch.
He's not frail, is he?
He's quite slight, isn't he? Yeah, he looks quite slight to me. But his personality is huge. You know, that his first touch when he came off the bench, I think it was at Old Trafford with the outs. He just oozes.
He gets you drooling, doesn't he?
Yeah,
he just gets you drooling. He's so good. I mean, who gets a player like that for £37 million? Liverpool and their scouting department, that's who. I mean, it's absolutely outrageously good scouting that they've managed to get him over the line. They have a much more settled team than Chelsea. I think if we all sat down here now and wrote out our 11 for the weekend, we'd get 9 of them. You know, maybe that midfield area, we might be sort of arguing over. I think it'll be Henderson, Thiago and one other in the middle of the park. I'm pretty sure about the front three being Diaz, Mane and Salah, and the back four takes care of itself, doesn't it?
Yeah, listen, the back four has been superb for Liverpool, you know, especially since Virgil van Dijk came in, solidified that, his presence, just the way he oozes confidence and calms them down. But like you say, you know, the high line, which Liverpool love to adapt because of the way they press from the front, I think it's a weakness and I think it's an area where you can get at Liverpool. And if Werner is being saved for anything, and he you know, if he's going to have a real big impact at Chelsea, I think this could be the game.
How long has he been saving himself for?
Oh, dear. I mean, look, what do you do? What do you do if you're Chelsea? How do you line up top? Because that's a key area. So they've got lots of selection dilemmas all over the park, really. Who's going to play at centre-half? Who plays in midfield? And who plays up top? Do they pick their top scorer or do they pick Kai Havertz? Because their top scorer is actually
Romelu Lukaku.
It is.
I'm not sure, you know. And again, I'll go back to the conversation I had with Thomas Tuchel straight after Lukaku had scored those 2 goals against Wolves. I asked him outright, Thomas, brilliant that Lukaku's back on the score sheet ahead of the FA Cup final. Today isn't the day to talk about that. It really is, mate. So I think Lukaku will be on the bench. I think he'll go with Kai Havertz. Wow. I think he'll think that Havertz gives him more mobility and maybe will stretch the Liverpool defence more than Lukaku will.
I mean, what they've been doing in the really big games, when they went to Real Madrid, when they were absolutely terrific, by the way, in the Bernabeu, and you were there for that game.
They were superb.
They were superb.
And Loftus-Cheek was excellent in that game as well. Yeah. We mentioned him earlier.
But he played in a slightly different position, didn't he? He didn't play as a
as a wing-back.
Sort of almost like a winger. But they played Werner, Mount and Havertz. So that seems to be, in the big games, the three that he goes with. Look, if Liverpool win, which I think we'll probably expect them to, but you know, Chelsea will have a say in it, it's a cup final, it will mean that Jurgen Klopp completes the set of winning all domestic trophies available to him. I heard someone say that it means he gets the full set of all the trophies that have been available to him since he's been at Liverpool. But he lost the Europa League final, didn't he? So that's not true. Not that he'll be contesting that any time soon. But he'll definitely complete the domestic trophy set if he wins this weekend. Whatever happens, there's going to be history made because Thomas Tuchel or Jurgen Klopp will become the first German manager to win the FA Cup. And if Chelsea lose, they'll be the first team to lose 3 straight FA Cup finals. Predictions, Crook?
2-0 to Liverpool.
2-0 to Liverpool. 4 of the last 25 FA Cup finals have been 2-0. Yeah, go on. Trevor?
3-1 Liverpool.
3-1 Liverpool. None of the last 25 finals have featured that scoreline. You never know, it could happen this weekend. I'm going to go 2-1 Liverpool. 20% of the cup finals in the last 25 years have been that scoreline. Right, let's move on.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. There's a lot more to those 90 minutes than what goes down on the pitch. With the latest odds, form guides and expert opinions, you'll know the score with Ladbrokes. Odds update on Talk Sport with Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com. 18 plus. BeGambleAware.org. T's and C's apply.
Relegate good times. Come on. Yes, the teams fighting, battling against relegation have got a big Sunday afternoon and it's live on Talk Sport. Tottenham Burnley gets us underway at 12 o'clock on game day and it's Leeds Brighton. From, I think it's 2 o'clock in the afternoon, but it could be at any time. Yeah, it is 2 o'clock in the afternoon. That's right. And it's live on TalkSport. An over-aggressive, ill-disciplined Leeds have dropped into the relegation zone at just the wrong part of the season. And these are crucial, crucial fixtures. And this one against an informed Brighton could be an opportunity for Brighton to rack up even more goals, Crook.
I think Jesse Marsh has lost the plot, to be honest. I'd like to say we gave him the benefit of the doubt when he was appointed. I'm not sure we did, really. It seemed a strange appointment. I don't disagree with the decision to get rid of Marcelo Bielsa, but I think they needed to bring in somebody with Premier League experience, arguably somebody with experience of fighting against relegation. It's a cliche, but had they have appointed Sam Allardyce until the end of the season and not Jesse Marsh, I think they would be safe. I think they would be staying in the Premier League.
But Trevor, when you don't have anything, then you have everything. And we only fear the future because we're wasting today. Sorry, I was just reading some Mother Teresa quotes. I thought that's what we had
well,
to do.
That's the other point, actually. I was speaking to a couple of members of my cricket team on Thursday evening.
Oh, God, are you comparing your cricket team to Leeds United, a professional football club in the Premier League?
The issue of Jesse Marsh came up. And I said, well, you know, he's obviously referencing Mother Teresa and Gandhi as inspirational figures. And the guy I was talking to said, yeah, but neither of them play professional football, which is a really good point, to be honest. He probably hit several nails on the head.
Oh, dear. I heard him say 3 games ago, I think it was Manchester City, it's not panic stations yet. And as soon as I heard that, I was like, when is it panic stations? You've got 3 or 4 games left. If it's not panic stations now, you're banging trouble and Leeds are going to struggle. And you look at the game against Manchester City and the Dallas injury, you know, which ridiculous. You know, it was a terrible foul. It was out of control. Mm-hmm. There was no need. There was no real danger. No. You know, I hope he's okay.
But we went in on that when it happened. We said that was a problem with their approach and it was going to cause them an issue. And it's continued to do so.
Overzealous. And then Ayling with a red card against Arsenal. And then you follow that up with Dan James with a red card. All unnecessary red cards, all unnecessary suspensions and all unnecessary key players that they're going to miss for these last 2 games. And for me, I don't think they'll get another point. I think they're going to get relegated.
What about the goal difference as well? I mean, I can't believe that someone could concede more goals than Norwich City, but it is possible, isn't it?
Oh, it's outrageous.
You have to be honest, though. I mean, they've had injury problems.
Yeah.
Calvin Phillips will be playing in the Premier League next year.
Wasn't that Bielsa's fault, though, Jesse Marsh?
Yeah, but they had injury problems before the January transfer window.
Yeah, so why didn't they
a chance to reinvest and give themselves a fighting chance, which they didn't take.
But for me, they've got two players in Rafinha and Calvin Phillips who will be playing in the Premier League, or in Rafinha's case, maybe an elite European league next season.
That's no comfort to Leeds fans now, though, is it? As they take
no,
on
but the
Brighton
rest of them won't
week.
Be. What I'm trying to say is this is a Championship squad that arguably overachieved last season under Marcelo Bielsa, in much the way that Sheffield United did in their first season under Chris Wilder. They haven't invested properly enough. So, again, Patrick Bamford, I know he's been injured this season, but is he somebody that another Premier League club are necessarily going to throw money at to bring back to the top flight? I'm not sure.
Well, not off the back of this season. Obviously, he's not played, but the body of work that he's done at Leeds, getting him promoted, staying in the Premier League the first year, I would say that if he is fighting fit and ready to go, he's going to have to prove that in the Championship. No one's going to take a punt on him, in my opinion, to go straight in and bring him to the Premier League in the summer.
But it's a Championship squad now being managed by a Championship manager.
Someone playing Championship manager. what I couldn't understand, and actually, you know, you said, I think you were sort of taking the mick a little bit on the fact that you said, he's lost the plot. But actually,
I think he has.
The other day when he was talking, I saw him on the sidelines and he was moaning about a decision that went against one of his members of staff. In fact, it was one of his players made a tackle in that Leeds Man City game. It was before Dallas got injured. And he went to the referee, that's not a foul. And I thought, well, that clearly is a foul. So either you don't know what a foul is, or you are so wrapped up emotionally in this contest that you're talking nonsense and actually making yourself look silly and everyone else around you. Now, obviously, the easy accusation is that everyone will label it, saying, oh, you just don't like him because he's got an American accent. Actually, the reason I was actually quite positive about him, I've done quite a lot of research, heard about what he'd been through as a coach and what he'd been going through in his personal life, and maybe that affected his journey at RB Leipzig. But ultimately, since he's come into the Premier League, he's come up with a lot of waffle and not much substance.
And Trevor, let me ask you as a former player, if you were part of a team fighting for their lives in the Premier League and your manager started referencing Mother Teresa and Gandhi, how would the players react?
Quite a few of them probably wouldn't know who they were. But
especially now, because let's be completely honest, you know, those figures are historical figures now to a lot of the players that are in that team. I mean, it's obviously there'll be some educated people in there that will know what it is, but they're not the first name on people's lips when you start talking about historical figures, are they? No. This generation, that generation.
I think there'd be a few heads turned in the changing room looking at each other like, what is this guy talking about? I think you just need to stick to simplicity and basics.
When not getting sent off. Like that might help as well.
Yeah, but just like, you know, it's all about performance. It's all about mentally getting yourself prepared, you know, to be there for the fight, but also to have the discipline, to have the intensity, to calm the game down when needed. These are things you should be talking about, not, you know, Mother Teresa and Gandhi. It just like beggars belief that you would start talking in a team talk about such people when they have no significance in football.
But you mentioned it there about, you've said it a couple of times, in big pressurised situations, calming the situation down. And one of the things that impresses me most about Graham Potter as a coach is that when things go really well for him, he's almost exactly the same as when they get thumped 5-0. He's very level-headed. And I asked him about that specifically, and he said, look, it's my job to come out here and present to you and everybody else, the players, the coaching staff, a level, focused way of behaving. But believe me, inside, it affects me. It gets me up. It gets me down. And, you know, obviously.
I've spoken to professional managers at times, before games, after games, and, you know, alluded to the fact if it was a big game, just nice and calm.
And I suppose my point was, is that in Potter, you've got that. In Jesse Marsh, you haven't got that.
Yeah. And at times, I've had a reply, which is, you know, we're going to war, and I'm looking at the message and thinking, this isn't going to go well, because it's a young manager and he's getting his players too hyped for this game. They're already hyped. It's a huge game, and lo and behold, man gets sent off to lose the game. And I'm thinking, well, he'll learn from it now, but you know, this is what young managers do. So, yeah, no, you've got to try and calm the players. Obviously, when you're in the bottom of the table, it's different. I've been in both. I've been towards the top of the table, bottom of the table. And when you're at the bottom of the table, you do need to get yourself up. You need to be motivated. You need to be right at it. And because usually you've got a team which, you know, on the level playing field, if you don't get contact with the opposition, you're not going to win the game. Whereas when you're at the top of the table, it's almost a compliment when you're getting kicked. You've got to stay calm and not get wrapped up in it emotionally. So there's different vibes and different psyche. But yeah, Mother Teresa and Gandhi, I wouldn't say are the right ones.
I think in that respect, this is probably just about the worst possible fixture for Leeds because of the reason that Sam has already alluded to. Absolutely. Graham Potter will be calm. Brighton will stick to their usual game plan. And I think they'll just control the game, Brighton, and Leeds will come out again, all guns blazing. They'll probably commit to attack because they'll feel they need to chase the game early on. And I can see Brighton winning comfortably. I agree with Trevor. I would be surprised if Leeds pick up another point between now and the end of the season.
Just one more Mother Teresa quote before we go. Yesterday is gone. And maybe soon, so will Leeds United. You're listening to the Game Day podcast from Talk Sport. Loads of big games over the weekend, including Everton against Brentford at 4:30 on Sunday. And Everton, well, they boosted their hopes of avoiding relegation with a victory at Leicester, then went to Watford, and I was there on Wednesday night, and drew 0-0. In fact, they're the first team not to score at Watford all season. And they didn't play sharp enough, fast enough, get proper connections in the final third. I don't even know if they were actually nervy. They just lacked a little bit of quality, Trevor.
Yeah, I think the recovery after the Leicester game, I thought they looked like they were a bit leggy. But as soon as they'd seen the formation, I thought Lamps is going for a point minimum and he doesn't want to give anything away. He went 4-5-1 or 5-4-1. And straight away, I just thought, yeah, he's sitting in here. You know, he doesn't want to encourage Watford at all. He doesn't want to have any jeopardy in this game. He would have happily, 90 minutes, blow the whistle. We'll take a point. We're happy with where we are. 36 points. I know mathematically they're not safe, but
nowhere near safe.
Looking at Frank and thinking what he might be thinking, he'll be thinking a waypoint is a good point to take at this time of the season.
Well, 36 points from 35 games. Burnley just below them, 34 points, 35 games. So those two have played the same number of games and there's a 2-point differential in Everton's favour. Leeds then below them, 34 points from 36. So they've played a game more than both Everton and Burnley. And they've got a vastly inferior goal difference. Like, I mean, the swing is 20 goals.
And they've got Brighton at home and they've got Brentford away. So yeah. Very, very difficult fixture.
Well, they have to win both games probably in order to survive.
Yeah, because you look at the rearranged games. Everton at home to Crystal Palace next Thursday. We know about Everton at home. Crystal Palace, I think, have been tremendous under Patrick Vieira, but clearly all of the motivation is going to be with Everton. Burnley go to Aston Villa, already lost at home to Aston Villa. So I think that one is more open to conjecture. But you're right, because of the goal difference, Leeds really need to be looking at least 4 points from their final two games. I just can't see it. Leeds fans listening to this podcast will be able to tell me the exact stats, but they go to Brentford on the final day of the season. Their record in the Premier League in London is lamentable.
Yeah.
Very, very difficult for Leeds. Very, very difficult.
Brentford have lost just two of their last nine, and that run includes victories over West Ham and Chelsea. So they're not going to be easy pickings for Everton, but we know at home the atmosphere that the Everton fans create. And I must say, look, you know, having been in Hertfordshire on Wednesday night, the atmosphere that the Everton fans created at Vicarage Road was absolutely sensational for an away team. I mean, bearing in mind that I think Vicarage Road is probably only 60% full of home fans, but the away fan allocation was jam-packed and they produced a brilliant display. That was the best thing about the entire game. I mean, there was not much in the match. There was hardly any chances, really. There was a lack of tempo to it. Loads of changes for Watford who have given up the ghost, really, but probably played their best game at home since November in that match against Everton, despite seven changes. But the supporters drove Everton on. And actually, the two best spells that they had sort of came after the Everton fans really revved up their support, which is, you know, it's going to be crucial at home. Because I spoke to Frank afterwards about it, and he was saying, look, you know, yes, it does help because it can only help propel you when you've got that sort of support behind you. But we have to deliver. And one thing they haven't delivered in is in front of goal. In front of goal has been a real issue. You know, Richarlison didn't really have a sniff at the in that game. They had one shot which was poured away by Ben Foster after the deflection. And Dominic Calvert-Lewin came off the bench and offered very, very little.
Did Frank thank you for your personal support as well since you've been there?
Yeah, he did actually. Yeah. He gave me a hug. We had a little chat. Yeah, cuddle, that sort of thing. What's wrong with me being supportive of a young English coach?
Nothing. No, I'm just asking a question.
I think, listen, we know Everton have had a really difficult season. But it's undeniable. Dominic Calvert-Lewin, top goal scorer last season. He's rarely played a game this season.
One goal from open play, and that's the opening day of the season.
It's affected him massively. His injuries, obviously, it's taken him longer to get over that injury, and there's been a lot of speculation regarding his future. And I think I just feel, you know, when you've got a player who's on form like he was last season, it can plaster over a lot of cracks and a lot of problems. And him not being in the team has kind of highlighted that they've got a really
I mean, like, Everton's issues are long and deep, aren't they? You know, at the end of the day, Frank Lampard came in, they'd won 1 in 15 Premier League games. Mm-hmm. They've won 5 in 15 since he joined. So there's been an uptick. But is it going to be enough? That's the question, you know. It was a missed opportunity on Wednesday night. It has to be seen that way, because if they had won, they would have put a massive gap between them and Leeds with two games to go that looks unbridgeable. But they've still got three games, which is good for them. They've got an extra game to play next week, and that could be crucial as well. Right, let's move on to another of the key fixtures this weekend. And I suppose the key question when we get to 2 o'clock on Sunday afternoon, we'll be with the title on the line and West Ham fighting for European football. What shirt will Trevor Sinclair be wearing this Sunday?
His Celtic one.
They get the trophy
Champions
Saturday.
Yeah, olé, olé. What's that?
They get the trophy Saturday, don't they, Celtic?
They do. Unfortunately, I can't be there.
But if Rangers win a European trophy, is that a better season for Rangers?
Absolutely.
Oh, absolutely.
100%.
Because they get into the Champions League group stages, and then the Celtic have to go into the qualifiers if that happens.
No. Essentially, any team from Scotland
winning
a European Cup will supersede whatever team wins the championship up there. It's an unbelievable achievement, and they've got every chance of doing that.
Okay. Wish them well.
But anyway, yeah, absolutely. Just to clarify, we did ask you a question. What shirt would you be wearing on Sunday? Well swerved. What are you going to wear? Are you West Ham or are you Man City?
I'm actually working for Manchester City TV. But listen, look at the importance of the game.
No, we want to know which one you're supporting.
Manchester City.
Oh, right. Okay. Right. Yeah. Now you can talk to us about the importance of the game.
Okay, the importance of the game. There's still a chance, even if Manchester City win that game, that West Ham can make top six and make Europa League. It depends on Manchester United. We don't know what Manchester United are going to turn up for the last games. I think they've got Palace at the end of the season, and hopefully Palace can do West Ham a favour, and West Ham can get the job done at Brighton. So, yeah, there's lots of different ways that can go. But on this particular day, I just feel Manchester City have put a lot into the league. They need the points desperately. And I think that desperation will be the difference. You know, obviously they've got quality in the side. That supersedes West Ham in general. But as a one-off game, I just think Manchester City is so focused. They've only got one thing to concentrate on. And you look at the performances since they went out of the Champions League, and they've been absolutely superb.
Well, West Ham have only got one thing to concentrate on now as well. And they've had more rest this week than Manchester City. And Chelsea, Liverpool and Tottenham have all lost at the London Stadium this year. And the Hammers have already knocked City out of the League Cup on penalties at that venue. Is there a chance that West Ham can throw a spanner in the works, Crookie?
I doubt it.
Or a hammer in the works? Maybe that'd be more appropriate.
A hammer in the works. unlikely. I think Manchester City have done brilliantly to refocus after that disappointment in Madrid. Their performance against Wolves in midweek, led by the inspirational Kevin De Bruyne, was sensational. I think it's given everybody at the club a lift, the impending arrival of Erling Haaland. And listen, I'm going to have to support Trevor here, because he's had a lot of stick on social media from our own Simon Jordan. Ultimately, I've noticed that.
What happened there then? Why did you get stick off of Simon?
I think he'd had a row with his missus and he just wanted to take it out on someone.
No, but Trevor's got a point on this, because I saw a television broadcaster dissecting the Erling Haaland transfer to the finest detail to somehow make what is effectively a £51 million signing into a £213 million transfer. All transfers have wages to add on, they have bonuses to add on, they have agents' yeah. payments to add on. But it seems that Manchester City are the only club who get dissected in such a way. They've signed a generational talent for £51 million.
One of the reasons for that is that in the past they have been investigated for not declaring exactly or being alleged to have declared exactly how the money that they've raised has been raised and where the money has ended up going. So that's why it's under scrutiny. But you're absolutely right. Every single transfer is exactly the same in that there is a huge transfer fee. Then there's an agent's fee. Then there's a signing on fee. I mean, Trevor knows because he's been involved in it. The most of the time, you will get a whacking great big, as a player, a whacking great big signing on fee. If you've got a £10 million transfer, you're going to get, what was it, 10% of the transfer fee? Is that right? As a signing on fee? By sort of, that's a sort of standard procedure, is it? Something like that?
Yeah, I mean, it's between 5 and 10%. You can negotiate. It depends what position you're in, but
so you end up getting £1 million.
The average, so you say you get £1 million, that might be spread over the 4-year contract. You get £250,000 a year as part of your signing on fee, and it'll be spread over the full length of the contract. But yeah,
but with that, you know, the other thing about the Haaland thing, Haaland, it depends where you are, and he says Haaland when he's in the UK, so we're going to go with that. But the other thing is that a few years ago, third-party ownership was outlawed. And you will remember that there were certain players that were owned by agents and that they would have...
Tevez
was a prime example of it. They would have half of his rights or the rights to that player, the economic rights to that player. Now, basically, that system, I don't think really has gone, actually. I think agents, what they've done instead is they've just changed the wording of it. So whereas Manchester City have probably actually paid £90 million in an effective transfer fee because they paid £51 million to Borussia Dortmund and £40 million to Haaland's agent. So his dad and
Raiola. And the fact that they've come out and they've been... clear with where them funds are going. Again, for me, it points back to this agency and what's going on with agents. It needs governing because there's no governing of governing.
But the reason that is so high is because of what I just said. I think before that player would have been part owned by an agent. It would be the agent that takes the risk on that player, brings it into a bigger league, and therefore sort of almost runs the career of it. But then eventually sells it on and makes a massive profit. And instead of them being able to do that because they own the player, now they're the representative and therefore getting a big slice of it. It is a murkier world.
Yeah.
It is a strange situation. It's something that FIFA tried to outlaw, but then couldn't quite get to total grips with it, especially with these big superstars.
They just dropped it completely.
It is worth a conversation, I think, at some point in the future. But what the good news is, I think, is that he's coming to the Premier League, which is great for... I think our league, because for so long, the big generational talents have been in Spain. You know, Ronaldo, Messi, they've been at Barcelona and Real Madrid. And now, arguably a player who is nowhere near the peak of his powers, he's 21 years of age, is coming to the Premier League to enjoy his peak years. And that in itself has got to be a positive thing, I think.
And from what I'm told, it isn't just that Manchester City blew everybody else out of the water financially. I think the likes of Real Madrid in particular were willing to offer the same kind of salary that he's going to be earning in the Premier League. But he believed that Manchester City at this moment in time were the elite club in Europe. He wants to play under Pep Guardiola, who he believes is the best manager in Europe. And there's that emotional pull that comes from the fact his dad played for Manchester City. Although Leeds fans probably won't want to hear that because he could have ended up at Elland Road on that basis.
But Isn't he a Leeds fan? I've seen him in a Leeds shirt. I swear I've seen him in a Leeds shirt.
Well, I've seen him in a Man City shirt. But maybe he's got as many shirts as Trevor Sinclair.
Absolutely. And my kids. So my kids will have QPR tops. They'll have Blackpool tops. They'll have West Ham tops. They'll have Manchester City tops. That's what happens when you're the son of a footballer. And you will have seen him in Leeds United shirts as well. But for me, going back to what you said, he's broke records in the Champions League, beating Lionel Messi, Mbappe, the youngest player to score 20 goals in the Champions League. He's got 80-odd goals in 80-odd appearances in the Bundesliga. He's 6'3". He's rapid. He's left-footed. And it's great that he's come to the Premier League. But
he's not very good in the air, though, is he?
Well, he's not shown that yet, but maybe that's just something that he's not been able to...
He's got something to work on. That's good. There's always good to have room for improvement somewhere.
But I agree with you. I think it's great that he's come to the Premier League. Yeah. Listen, I put myself in his boots and I thought, right, where would I go? Taking my blue tinted glasses off, would you go to Real Madrid where you've got an aging squad? Would you go to Barcelona where you've got a young manager? Or would you go to Manchester City?
Yeah.
Manchester City was the club that I would go to if I was him. And that, I think that's why he chose that club.
Right, we are towards the end of term. School's out for the summer. Aston Villa against Crystal Palace, Watford against Leicester, Wolves against Norwich. Who cares? Because I'm sure none of their players do, really. Not that much. Well, not on the evidence of what I've seen from some of them over the course of the last week or so. Aston Villa actually played quite well against Liverpool in midweek. Steven Gerrard just revving them up, getting them going before the end of the season. And they've signed Philippe Coutinho on a permanent deal today, Crook.
Yeah, and I think for a lot less than the £33 million clause they agreed when he signed on loans. That looks like good business.
So how did they manage that?
Aston Villa. Well, I think Barcelona are skint, as we know, and Barcelona were keen to get the money in the accounts in time for the end of their financial year.
What did you say the deal was?
I think it's around about £20 million, I think.
Okay, but if we add £13 million fees, signing on fees and wages onto it, how much does it really cost?
Well, we can ask Simon Jordan that question. It looks like good business for Aston Villa. I still think maybe he's been a bit underwhelming. Coutinho, he's in flashes. Yeah. He's shown
We've seen a lot, but not enough.
But I think if Aston Villa are to seriously challenge in the upper echelons of the league, then he needs to do it on a more consistent basis. I guess Steven Gerrard will say with a full pre-season at Aston Villa behind him, he will be a better player. We shall see.
Trevor, Aston Villa, Crystal Palace, is this the battle of two teams that next year should be fighting for maybe a top eight finish?
Well, I would say Aston Villa being the size of the club that it is, with the manager in place and the players that they've signed and the players they've got, they should be. With Crystal Palace, I think that they've made real positive steps under Patrick Vieira. I fear they're going to lose Conor Gallagher. I don't think he's going to be there next season, whether he goes back to play for Chelsea or he gets sold. I'm not sure that Crystal Palace will be able to afford his transfer fee. But what I would say is Crystal Palace have been a joy to watch this season. Players that have come in and done really well under Patrick, had breakthrough seasons defensively, offensively, and more of the same. I'm sure Crystal Palace are hoping for the same. And if they can get top 10 again, I think that'll be a considered a very good season once again, and a building towards getting in that top eight and start, you know, competing for European football if it continues to go well.
Palace have scored in four of the last five away league matches. Villa have scored five goals in their last two outings. It could be a bit of a goal fest. That should be fun. Watford against Leicester is 2 o'clock Sunday as well. Watford already relegated. Leicester, well, they've managed to beat Norwich in midweek, but they've sort of tumbled down the Premier League over the course of the last few weeks. Be interesting to see what team Roy Hodgson puts out, really, because he was... I asked him afterwards if it was difficult for him to raise a team to play in the game against Everton. He said, no, everyone really applied themselves really well. But then I spoke to somebody else at Watford after that, and they basically said that quite a lot of their players had cried off injured when they probably could have, if they really wanted to, played that game. So it'll be interesting to see what team they are able to put out on Sunday. They've got a new manager, and Rob Edwards doesn't take charge until the summer. Wolverhampton Wanderers may well be looking for a new manager as well, Crook. Is there any sort of news on that? There's rumours going around. I know you've been foraging about it because someone else contacted me and said to me, yeah, Crook's been on this one as well.
There have certainly been some issues with Bruno Large in terms of fallouts with players in training. I was told going into the Chelsea game that Wolves needed to produce some strong performances between then and the end of the season in order for Bruno Large to avoid coming under more scrutiny. I think they did that at Stamford Bridge. Did they do that against Manchester City? It's very difficult when you've got a team motivated who are playing for the Premier League title. I think we're going to know a lot more about Wolves going into their final matches of the season. If they lose at home to Norwich, I think Bruno Lage will be under extreme pressure. But I think it's going to be a summer of change at Molineux. In my transfer notebook on the TalkSport website on Thursday, I led off on Raul Jimenez possibly being made available for transfer for as little as £15 million, which is certainly a lot less than they would have commanded had he have gone to open market
a couple of years ago. That's down to the fact that he's become really a shadow of the player that he was prior to the injury, really. And that is a sad fact.
I think they've accepted that. And I think they've accepted that maybe a change of scenery would be good for the player. He's been there for 4 years, but he's only scored 6 Premier League goals this season. I expect Ruben Neves to leave. Nelson Semedo has options. And Chelsea, certainly at the turn of the year, was showing an interest in Max Kilman. I know they want to bring in some British players, Chelsea, this summer, but Kilman's form in the second half of the season hasn't been great. I think Romain Saïss is moving on as well. So whoever is in charge, be it Bruno Lage or a replacement, I think it's a big summer for Wolves because they're one of a number of teams, actually, who could find themselves being dragged into a relegation battle next season if they lose key players and they don't replace them properly.
Okay. Norwich, they have lost 12 of their last 14 games. They've been beaten 4-0 by West Ham, 3-0 by Newcastle, and 3-0 by Leicester City recently. So I think if I was going to back anyone this weekend, it would be Wolverhampton Wanderers. That's going to come back and haunt me. I have a canary squeaking in my ear for the next week. Right, looking forward to the cup final at the weekend. Trevor, looking forward to seeing you at some point over the not too distant future. Thank you very much for staying up and getting involved in the podcast tonight.
Always a pleasure. Always a
Crookie,
pleasure.
Thank you very much for bowling us over with some of your wonderful bits of information.
I played it straight back most of the night.
What were you drinking?
It's on the cider.
No, it is a cider. Well spotted, Trevor.
Oh, right. So you're being very professional, having a drink during the course of this podcast.
It's 11 o'clock on a Thursday night. I think we're allowed.
By the way, the rumours are that we're going to be sponsored in the not-too-distant future by a menswear company, right? So that would mean that Crook has to wear said menswear. So you might actually smarten up a little bit. You won't be able to wear your cricket gear then, fella.
He'll still make it look average. Don't worry about that.
You're supposed to be selling it to the sponsors, Trevor. All right, okay, maybe we'll give it to Trevor.
That's a shocker.
Right, that's it. We're back on Monday morning when you wake up, looking back on the FA Cup final. Who will be lifting the latest piece of silverware?
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. The latest odds? We set them. Form guides? We've got them. Expert opinions? We share them. The best fans in the world deserve the best. Be match day ready before the whistle blows with Ladbrokes. Odds update on Talk Sport with Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com. 18 plus. BeGambleAware.org. T's and C's apply.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.